Of the Daft on Draft podcast. I am your co-host, Corey Kinnon, again alongside James Foster here. Today, we are going to go over this week 7 slate, and we'll talk about any rising players that come up for us as we get through these games here. James, we got a little bit of a better slate than we had last week, so we got quite a bit to talk about here. Yeah, pretty nice slate.
Yeah, some exciting matchups there. They seem a little bit more evenly spaced. The spacing of college football games, they're not sending their best when it comes to the schedule designers, I'll say that.
No, they're overlapping some big-time games. It's really frustrating. But we had some Conference USA and American football today. And, yeah, we had some decent group of 6 games going on tonight as we record this podcast. But moving on to Friday, the day this episode will be released, Washington Rutgers. And
gotta shout out Ian Strong though for Rutgers.
Yeah. Okay. No, I haven't. Not yet.
Okay, he's definitely worth watching. I think like top 60 for sure.
Okay.
Really big but fluid route runner, great hands. He's been really productive this year. I think he had a quieter game last week, but his tape against Iowa was phenomenal.
6'3", 211.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nice. Where are you at with Athlon Kaliak Manis?
So I've noticed Ian Strong, and yeah, he throws some dimes for sure, but I haven't sat down and like evaluated him specifically. I'm watching Ian Strong's routes basically. So I don't have too much of a like strong take as far as a draft grade or anything, but yeah, he can play.
Yeah. Okay. Love it. For Washington, Denzel Boston is always, again, people like Drew Azapardi, the right tackle there. I was pretty underwhelmed watching Drew Azapardi, but like the NFL always needs depth, so he's going to get drafted for sure. Moving on, Ohio State, Illinois, big noon kickoff on Fox on Saturday. Without Xavier Scott, though, this Illinois defense has been a little rough here. Again, head-to-heads there. We've got Caden Curry's draft stock's been like on the rise, but I mean, he's probably going from like what PFA to a day 3 pick. I would say the tools just aren't outrageous. The length isn't outrageous, but he'll go against Kenyatta Jackson. Kenyatta Jackson will go against JC Davis there for Illinois, who also needs to have a pretty good game here, but another day 3 player that we're talking about there.
That Ohio State defense tape was awesome last week.
I thought
Caleb Downs had a great game. And I mean, we've talked extensively about how his role kind of prevents him from really making plays, but it's even further when you consider the fact that they have like 55 defensive snaps a game compared to other teams that have like 80. So just over time, it's like there's like 2 or 3 notable reps from Caleb Downs, Jermaine Matthews, because they aren't like really exposed a lot. It's a great defense and they're just all kind of doing their job. But Kenyatta Jackson, I thought, had probably his best game that I've seen of him last week. And Caden McDonald was solid as well. Also, the guy I really wanted to shout out, Davison Igbinosin, who I've always thought just clearly has never been taught the rule book as far as like pass interference.
Yeah.
but like they couldn't release off the line of scrimmage against him. He was blanketing shit last week.
Yeah. Yeah. I haven't really checked back in on Jermaine Matthews either. Have you watched much Jermaine Matthews?
Yeah. So he had this rep that was basically the polar opposite of Davison Igbinosin. So if you ever watched Igbinosin, like I'm not exaggerating, it's some of the worst ball skills I've ever seen, where it's not even that he just can't turn his head around, which is a really tough thing to do. He is like literally hugging. He's literally choking the receiver when the ball's in the air. I've never seen anything like it. And then you see Jermaine Matthews in like the 3rd or 4th quarter of the Minnesota game, basically teleports through a defender to make a pass breakup without getting a penalty. He's like driving on it's like a comeback or a stop or something. He's driving on it from depth and he just kind of like raises, like goes under his arm. It was a miraculous adjustment to, you know, he breaks up the pass, doesn't get called for a penalty. So really nice play there.
Yeah, I came into the season saying that Jermaine Matthews was probably Ohio State's best corner last year, let alone coming into this season. So that included Denzel Burke and then Jordan Hancock, kind of more of a safety there. But so that's good to hear. I'm still waiting for Ohio State. And again, I'll go back and watch the Washington tape because Denzel Washington is a good one-on-one matchup to watch for those corners. But like, still waiting for Ohio State to play like another good loaded head-to-head to like really have a resume game for some of these guys to put on tape and on their scouting reports.
Yeah, the Illinois game, especially with all the injuries, it's kind of just another opportunity for Arvel Reese to tee off.
Yeah, it really is. It really is. All right, Alabama, Missouri.
I'm excited for this one.
Caden Proctor versus Zion Young here.
I'm honestly, you know what I'm more excited for is Caden Proctor versus, is it Damon Wilson?
Yeah.
That kind of epitomizes the transfer portal right there, because we've been talking about how Georgia just doesn't have the juice at pass rusher. In previous years, Wilson would have been like the former five-star that was a disappointment, and then, you know, all of a sudden in his last year breaks out for Georgia, but now he's doing it for Missouri. So kind of interesting there. But when I was watching Zion Young, I kept thinking that he was having really good pass rushing reps, and then I'm like, oh no, that's Wilson. So I've kind of shifted my focus to him with the Missouri edge duo, but they're both, you know, top 120 picks, I think, at a minimum. So that'll be a big test for Caden Proctor, regardless of who he's going up against.
We've got Kevin Coleman against Domani Jackson as well, but you and I have had multiple conversations about Domani Jackson. I'm not quite sure how much merit we need to give there.
I've never seen it with Keon Sabb either.
Yeah.
I always pay attention to him when I'm watching Bama, because I feel like he's been on my Excel file for like 3 years now, but I've just never really seen it.
So he had a really good national championship game with Michigan against Washington. And he was on my radar then. I was like, I'm going to watch this guy come into the season. And then he transferred to Bama, and I just haven't seen much since that national championship game when he was with Michigan. So I definitely agree there. Isaiah Horton, Jeremy Bernard, Ty Simpson. That's kind of the trio again in this game to keep an eye on in terms of Bama players. Man, I really like Isaiah Horton and Jeremy Bernard both. I really do.
Jeremy Bernard is just so reliable. It's very Emeka Egbuka coded. Not that they're the same players, but just kind of what you're getting when you draft them. It's a very high floor.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Pitt, Florida State. I don't have much to talk about that game there.
I thought Rasheem Biles had a great game the other week, but he's pretty small, I think.
He's very small.
Yeah.
Columbus kid, though, so that's cool. He's from Columbus.
Oh, nice. Kyle Lewis, the other linebacker. I think I really like him.
Okay. So we got a couple linebackers there for Pitt. Deuce Robinson.
Yeah.
To watch out for there for Florida State. But
the transfer from Houston, Jerry Wilson, has been bad.
I know, which is disappointing because I liked his Houston tape. Yeah. I mean, he had the game of his life against Baylor last year, which a lot of that was just Sawyer Robinson throwing them lollipops. But all right, I'm going to skip around a little bit here because there's not a whole lot going on with some of these Big 12 matchups like Oklahoma State, Houston.
We got Oklahoma, Texas, right?
We do. We also have Indiana, Oregon, which is listed at the same time. So we have those games at the same slate. Do you think it was kind of an overreaction to unrank Texas completely from a top 10 team after losing to Florida?
Well, it depends, because the AP voters have this ass backwards way that they construct their list. And so by their logic, yes, that was an overreaction. But the problem that they have is that they get their starting point and then they adjust from there every single week. And so, you know, what they really need to do is just reevaluate it, clean slate every week, who has the best resume. And like Texas and Penn State wouldn't have even been that highly ranked to begin with if it was based off of resume anyway. So, that's my take.
Definitely a huge overcorrection to unranked Penn State based off of that game too, but even more of an overreaction. Yeah. Texas, man, Texas is looking a little rough up front. I haven't checked back in on Goosby, but everything that I was told from people is that that Texas offensive line played miserably against.
Well,
against
they had a freshman right tackle who was, yeah. I mean, it's some of the most offensive stuff you'll ever see.
Yeah, rough stuff there. In this game, particularly head-to-heads, we might get Malik Muhammad versus Deion Burks a little bit, but again, Muhammad's not a player that we came into the season high on. Anthony Hill's another one we didn't come really into the season high on.
For Texas, it's really just Trevor Goosby that I'm holding out hope for. And if he starts to fall off, then Texas is going to go off the weekly watch list pretty soon.
Oklahoma Mateer is supposed to come back for this game and play. So
I'm
obviously
excited for Oklahoma's offense.
Yeah, we'll keep a close eye on Mateer there and Deion Burks, obviously. Have you watched Jared Kanick at all?
No.
He's like 6'2", 230, so he's definitely a fullback at the NFL level, but he's a good mover. Like he's definitely kind of like Kyle Juszczyk coded a little bit.
Okay.
But he plays tight end one, inline tight end for Oklahoma as well in that game. I am going to be excited to watch kind of the like Eli Bone and some of those other defensive backs for Oklahoma against the speed of these Texas receivers. Again, the Texas receivers have been like even Ryan Wingo has been pretty bad, man. But like, I want to see them challenge vertically these Oklahoma defensive backs, and we'll go from there. I think the headliner of the weekend is Indiana Oregon, and that obviously comes down to Fernando Mendoza and Dante Moore, who we've talked a ton about. Currently my top two quarterbacks in the class, pretty neck and neck. I'd still lean Mendoza right now, but pretty neck and neck there as well. We mentioned on the podcast earlier from Mendoza, like my expectations for these quarterbacks are different. I think they have to be different because like we're talking about Indiana and that offensive line against Oregon's defensive line versus Oregon's offensive line versus Indiana's defensive front. So I think the amount of pressure and the amount of stuff thrown in Mendoza's face is going to be significantly steeper than what we're going to see thrown at Moore. And so I think you kind of have to adjust your eyes for that. But what we want to see from Mendoza is more of the same, honestly, like going back to his Cal tape. We've talked about this a lot as well. Even going back to the Iowa tape, like Mendoza's a quarterback who isn't afraid to sit in and take a shot and still throw the football, like throw the ball on a rope in crunch time. And we've seen it on his tape time and time again. So like, and we've talked about as well, if you want to be the number one overall pick, then elevate your team when your team is the underdog in this game. So, and Oregon's a 7.5-point favorite. So it's not even projected to be that tight of a football game between Oregon and Indiana here. So like, that's the kind of stuff for Mendoza. It's like, elevate your team, man. Like I understand on paper, you're looking at a pretty big disadvantage, but like, can you still elevate your team? From Dante Moore, kind of more of the same, like how, like, I just want to see him be the elite processor, the elite bus driver is the wrong word because bus drivers makes him sound like more of a game manager, but that Penn State game, he really did elevate that team. But that elite, like have that elite comfort level that he's had, even in like Beaver Stadium, fourth quarter whiteout, that calmness, that stillness.
Yeah,
that's kind of what I'm looking
for. The engine
for,
of the offense.
Yeah, he's his nails. He's flat out, both these quarterbacks are flat out nails. So should be a fun game there. But again, kind of level setting those expectations. Omar Cooper Jr., Elijah Surratt again.
Indiana. Oregon's got a talented secondary, so that'll be a good matchup for them. I've got both of their teams pulled up here. Let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So in my top 10 players in this game, I've got 3 Indiana players and 7 Oregon players.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I don't really like bet on sports, but I would probably take Oregon -7 because Indiana has a park bench at right tackle and like an unplayable at right guard. And so you're going to see this game on Mateo Uyunglele's draft cutup and Amari Washington's draft cutup.
Mm-hmm. So. And even I think Pat Coogan and Carter Smith are like fine, but like they're both like different players. Like they're both day three players still. And those are the two best offensive linemen.
But like, I'm fine with day three players are great in college.
Yeah. Yeah, like, exactly.
That'll be fine for Mendoza, but
Yeah, so maybe some Pat Coogan versus Amari Washington, but that's still a matchup that Washington should handily have the advantage in.
What do you think about Washington?
Everybody seems to be in love with him. I watched the Penn State game and I thought, like, yeah, he's pretty stout, but like I didn't see a ton of upside on like those third down situations.
Yeah, it's kind of, it's really tough. It's just based off of like a few plays. Like when he really explodes off the ball, like
the flashes are awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It could be a fun conversation between him and Caden McDonald, because I kind of think the third down stuff is similar between those two players.
Really? But
they're both young and exploding draft stock wise. So
what would you say, Caden McDonald versus Dominique Orange as far as pass rushing?
I'd probably take Caden.
I hard disagree.
Really?
Yeah, I was rewatching.
Dominique Orange. Like, he's a good two down player, man. But when I watch him on third down, like I don't
explosive into his bull rush, dude.
I know, but
and like I'm not saying that as in Dominique Orange is gonna get you 50 pressures a year. Like I'm not drafting him for third down. But yeah, compared to Caden McDonald, who I view him as like Alfred Collins kind of.
Okay. I did a film room for my Substack on the Cybuck game against Iowa. And I was like, first, second down, this dude's awesome. We got to like third and obvious. And it wasn't like third and ones, third and twos, where he still had to kind of read step and like play the run. But like obvious third down. So like, there's not a whole lot going on here.
Yeah, it doesn't happen consistently. And that's the thing with the defensive linemen is that sometimes you watch their entire college season and you see him get off the ball like five times. So
yeah. Yeah. Let's move on to, honestly, I don't think we need to talk about like Iowa State, Colorado. So the next like head to head that I see that's popping out to me would be Northwestern, Penn State. And that's because Anto Saka versus Drew Shelton.
Yeah.
Would be a head to head that I'd be really, really interested in that game there.
I've not really been impressed by Drew Shelton this year.
Me neither.
I watched the guard today. I do really like him, but I think the rest of the offensive linemen who I hadn't really, I only watched Drew Shelton over the summer, but I wasn't really too impressed with the O-line as a whole outside of the guard, the left guard, right?
Yeah. Yep. Ioana. Yep. Yeah. Yeah. I like him a lot too. Again, I picked him in our fantasy draft yesterday. So as my offensive lineman to go with there. So
How does that work? How do you have stats for that?
What are you talking about?
How do you have an offensive lineman in fantasy?
No, I'm talking about our fantasy draft we did on the podcast yesterday.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Our draft we did on the pod. All right. Some of these Big 12 matchups, like I'm scratching my head about trying to like Kansas State, TCU. Like, okay, who am I going to? Josh Hoover, obviously. This is fun to on the podcast here. I was told today that Josh Hoover is probably 60-40 leaning declaring.
Really?
Yeah. So right now I think I would have Hoover at five, QB five. And in a class like this, man, like I really like this quarterback class. Could this be, so this would be another Dafter draft maybe for another week once we get a little deeper in the season. But like, obviously we're not going to see six quarterbacks like we saw in 2024. Could we see five quarterbacks go in the first round this year?
Ty Simpson, Dante Moore, Lenore Sellers, Mendoza, Mateer. I feel like the things working against that would be Sellers going back to school.
I would have Hoover or Mateer as well.
Simpson, Moore, and Mendoza are kind of like, I don't want to say taking time bombs because it's not like I'm expecting them to fail, but it's just the sample size I feel like is really small with all of them. And it's, we could get a bad 2 week stretch and then all of a sudden we're kind of, you know, not talking about them like we were back in October. But you know, at this point, I think you've got to assume they're going to be first round picks. I would probably wouldn't say five though.
Okay. I'm trying to think. Yeah. It's hard right now. That's what I'm saying. Like, let's talk about this in 3 weeks again. Cause we'll have like if we get to week 10, and we're still talking about Mendoza and Moore and Simpson the same way. And it's like, yeah, those guys are going to go first round. So it's probably a better Dafter draft in 3 weeks to revisit that. But like, yeah, I would say like Simpson, Mendoza, Moore, Obviously, Sellers, if Sellers decides to declare, and I would say if we continue the same trajectory, he probably will. And then I think Hoover would be that fifth right there for me.
I really like Hoover. He seems like the kind of guy that after the Senior Bowl or something, when people get to talk to people in the league, they're like, oh yeah, Josh Hoover, he could be the guy that, you know, sneaks into the first round.
Yeah, I think so too. The scout that told me that he's 60-40 leaning declaring is like, he's really mature and he thinks he's ready was the feedback that I got. So, yeah, I mean, he's got the arm, he's got the tools. So like, I don't see why not. As long as we keep this up, right?
To me, the reason that I would potentially go back if I were him is the accuracy. Like that's really just the one hang up, but he's so confident working the middle of the field, and I love his pocket movement. So yeah, I'm a big fan of Hoover. I have him QB7, but him versus Mateer, I could go either way on, honestly.
Yeah. You have him QB7. So he's probably having guys like Nuss in front of him then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I am giving, like, I just haven't lowered Nussmeier's grade. Like, I would probably right now I would take them ahead of Nussmeier, but I'm just, I feel like he was playing injured. So I'm just going to wait and see, like, what he looks like.
Yeah.
But I'll be just kind of changing him from a late third to an early third back and forth all of the year. So,
yeah. Tennessee, Arkansas. Again, this is if I think I will feel comfortable if Brazzle stacks a fourth game in a row saying like, yeah, this guy, I feel comfortable calling him a first round pick, a top 32 player in the class. That's where I'm at with Brazzle, the Tennessee wide receiver there. I'm trying to think if there's anybody else in the offensive side of the ball for Tennessee that I'm like overly optimistic or concerned about in this game. And I can't obviously, Wendell Moe. We've talked a little bit about Wendell Moe, the right guard there for Tennessee as well. Going against, hopefully David Oki is full go in this game. Now they've kind of been ramping him back up, but I'm hoping David Oki's full go.
Lance Hurd versus Quincy Rhodes.
Yeah.
Lance Hurd's I don't really like Lance Hurd as a prospect. I think he has really heavy feet.
Yeah.
But
I was gonna say
he's got like heavy hands. It'll be like a good, I'm saying that as, you know, he's going up against Quincy Rhodes, so it's a quality matchup for him. But yeah, Hurd is kind of just a snatch trap merchant.
Yeah. Yeah. I would agree with that. Quincy Rhodes coming off a pretty much an ineffective game against Notre Dame, I would say. Didn't do a whole lot against Notre Dame. So if we want to continue the Quincy Rhodes first round conversation, then this is a game that we need to see something from as well. Talen Green has, for some reason, some buzz out there. I personally think that Talen Green is borderline draftable. But
yeah, man, I'll be honest. I watched one Talen Green game and I was like, yeah, this is not for me. So I don't have anything to add.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Florida, Texas A&M. Can Florida keep it up? Win a second big game in a row here after knocking off Texas. They go into College Station now. So
I'm rooting for Florida just for chaos.
Oh yeah.
I want to have the longest tenure that is spent entirely on the hot seat of all time.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I will say this on paper feels like a matchup that Cassius Howell should be able to take advantage of, because I do think Austin Barber plays very high and is pretty stiff. So Cassius Howell's ability to bend and take tight corners, I think is going to work against Barber in this game. So like that's a head to head that I think that Howell should have a pretty steep advantage in, but we'll see how that plays out on the actual field. Again, I really like the Florida guard, Najee Harris. I really like Najee Harris. So he's got like Albert Regis and some of those defensive linemen for Texas A&M in this game as well. Casey Concepcion, a wide receiver for A&M, is on the track, on that trajectory to be a top 50 player, I would say. Maybe even a top 32 player in this class.
He's had a really strong year.
Anything else in this game you want to bring up?
I think that Casey Concepcion might be the most explosive receiver out of his breaks in college football. Like just the amount of separation that he creates with the first two steps out of his break, I think rivals anyone. And he's one of these players where his feet are so quick that he can afford to kind of run TikTok routes that a lot of people can't get away with. Cause
yeah.
he can just kind of give you a couple extra stutter steps and it doesn't really slow him down because he's so quick. So just a impossible player to cover.
Yeah. Yeah. He's a lot of fun. A lot of fun. All right. There's not really much to talk about with Texas Tech and Kansas.
Doesn't Kansas have a right tackle that you like?
Enrique Cruz Jr., like in glimpses, I like him. Okay. But like the long stretch stuff is a little rougher than the flashes. I got like a little overeager there because I really loved Bryce Cable dude last year. And everybody's like, why do you like this guy? And I was like, this guy's going to be an NFL guard. Like he's going to get drafted. He didn't get a combine invite or anything like that. And then got drafted in the fifth round. So I felt really vindicated on that. And I think I got a little over anxious or overeager about those Kansas offensive linemen. But
I think to me, the most exciting player in this game is Texas Tech's tight end, Terrence Carter. Who I watched like in full today, dude. And the other thing is that apparently he's 245 pounds. When I had him listed, I had him at 232 on my sheet. So exceeded my expectations once again there. He is – I haven't seen a faster tight end, I don't think.
No.
Yeah.
And this class particularly. And, right. Like, for that size, like, he's actually built like one of those
Amari Nyblack, the Texas tight end. Mm-hmm. Is literally the fastest tight end I've ever seen. He runs like 23 miles an hour.
It's amazing.
It's absurd. But yeah, dude, Terrence Carter is, I mean, he just tears up open grass. He's got incredible ball skills. This, the oil money is really cooking for them this year. I'm watching Texas Tech.
They should sleepwalk through the Big 12 after beating Utah. They should rematch Utah in the Big 12 championship, honestly, is what it should come down to. But yeah, Terrence Carter, I had a scout tell me, like, this is a guy I'm going to pound the table for. And I asked, like, well, how early do you think you would take him? And he said third round. So like, there's some love out there for Terrence Carter for sure.
Yeah, I gave him an early third.
He just feels like one of those, like, Jonnu Smith regens. Like, one of those brands of tight ends. Georgia-Auburn. We talked about this in the pod yesterday, man, but the talent pool at Georgia this year is rough.
Playing for Missouri.
Rough.
Yeah.
Yeah. Playing for Missouri. Same with Auburn, man. Cause I mean, Xavier Chaplin was the one who came in with the hype there at Auburn and Eric Singleton too. And I've been a little disappointed in both. Extremely disappointed in Chaplin, which we didn't come into the season super high on him as high as others did, but yeah. So
I was sort of equally out on Eric Singleton. Mm-hmm. He just, like, he doesn't have really any nuance as a route runner. So it's a pure deep threat and he is really fast, but yeah, he's kind of capped at like an early fourth until he can show something to set up breaks.
Yep. Yep. Feel similarly there. So like for once we're going to get into a Georgia Auburn game and we're like, there's not much going on.
Did you see that apparently Xavier Chaplin has hearing problems, which is why
I saw that. For one, as a head coach, why would you ever say that out loud?
Yeah, I don't know.
Bizarre. Yeah, I saw that. That's crazy.
That would explain some things, I guess. But yeah.
Doesn't explain his pad level or his stiffness, but Michigan USC. The Mekhi Lemon show's back after a bye week here.
This is the RB2 showdown.
It is the RB2 showdown. Justice Haynes versus Wayman Jordan here.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because, yeah, again, Dane Brugler dropped his top three at every position today, kind of a reset, and he had Justice Haynes as his running back too. We've talked a lot about Wayman Jordan on this podcast. Obviously, Jonah Coleman's in that conversation too. But, man, this running back class is shaping up to be top heavy in terms of there's one and then a drop off. But yeah, we'll see both those running backs in this game, the Mekhi Lemon show as well. Again, I don't love Jair Hill, the Michigan corner, at all. So this should be a favorable matchup for those USC receivers in that regard. Jaden Maiava, like some people want to talk about Jaden Maiava, but like it looks like he's throwing a ball that's been soaked in water for like 24 hours every time I watch him throw. I don't know if you feel the same way.
Yeah.
But it just feels like the ball feels really heavy to him when it comes out of his hand.
The one player in this, I don't know, man. At some point, like, one of these receivers has to not just have an insane game every single week. Like, it feels like Chris Braswell, Casey Concepcion, Chris Bell, Mekhi Lemon are all like the first four names that I write down for helmet stickers every week. And then it's like, I can't do that. So is somebody going to be able to slow down Mekhi Lemon is the main thing that I'm looking for. Also, like some stuff that Anthony Lucas, the edge rusher, has shown this year. Mm-hmm. Really good frame, 6'5", 279 pounds, good length. But he was beaten up on Michigan State's offensive tackles, who are boo-boo.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, Michigan, I mean, Austin Sprague maybe next year, but like there are like Michigan's unit's solid as a whole, but again, there's not a lot of draftable, like notable names along that offensive line right now. So we'll see what Anthony Lucas can do there for sure. South Carolina, LSU. Sellers, Nussmeier here. I'm excited about that.
I feel like people have written Sellers off prematurely.
And I don't get it. Like, the Kentucky game was his roughest game of the season. I'll get that. But like, up to that point, like, the Missouri game is exceptional. Even though they lost that game, like, that the tape is very good.
Wasn't the Kentucky game where he had like 14 attempts though?
Yeah, but like he was spray shooting everything.
Yeah, I remember that. But like, I feel like as a whole, it's been kind of
it's been an improvement.
It's like a B year, you know, like yeah. Pretty solid, like really good.
And he's 20, and you can see the incremental progress. That's what you want to see from a quarterback you're thinking about drafting really
high. He's throwing with infinitely more confidence past his first read than he was last year. Like, I mean, I don't understand how. Like, why people aren't promised. It's not like if I were to get on here and say that, you know, he's arrived, that would be an exaggeration. But I don't know why I'm seeing him like tank down boards.
Yeah, I don't know
if people are watching.
No, and it might be because he missed most of the Vanderbilt game with concussion, and it might just be QB wins related as well because South Carolina is losing a lot of football games. But like, I don't get it either. Because even the Vanderbilt game, those he had 7 pass attempts and one was an interception on a defensive tackle that dropped that replaced in coverage, which is like, okay, I can understand the process there of missing that. Like, I can understand that we can work on that. Before he went out with that concussion, I thought like this is the best, the cleanest operation Sellers has ran outside of that pick. So like, yeah, I don't get why he's tanking down boards either. Doesn't make a ton of sense to me. Again, I'm not a huge Jalen Kilgore fan, but like he's going to be tested with a ton of speed in this game from those LSU wide receivers of Aaron Anderson, Verion Brown, Savion Thomas, Chris Hilton. They can all freaking fly. So we'll see how that holds up. I really like Savion Thomas, man. I know he's not getting targets, but they're giving him like manufactured handoffs out of the backfield and stuff like that too. And he's their return specialist, and he scored a few touchdowns through the air this year for him too. But like, he's not going to get feathered with targets because they have so much wide receiver talent that nobody is, but he's a name that like, I really like.
Watching this LSU wide receiver room will give you ADHD.
Yeah.
It's so hard to keep track of, but yeah, he had a rep that like really caught my eye. Just, you can see his burst down the sideline, but they get like 5 real opportunities a game. It feels like, which is a good problem to have, I guess, if you're LSU, but they haven't been able to convert that into an effective offense.
Yeah, we might have mentioned on the podcast last week, but Aaron Anderson is going to be everybody's favorite Senior Bowl wide receiver, and because he's going to cut everybody up in one-on-ones. But yeah.
To me, I mean, LSU is way more interesting on the defensive side of the ball. AJ Halsey, Mansoor Delane, those are my 2 highest graded players for LSU.
Yeah. Yeah. I did watch Halsey. He made my 7-up 2 weeks ago as in that game. I'm not a huge Whit Weeks fan though. Like, so like second level, fine. But like, to me, he gives me like extreme cat chasing a laser pointer vibes where he's just like vibing, just running wherever he sees action. But yeah, I do like Halsey. I like Halsey quite a bit. Obviously Mansoor Delane.
Somebody told me that, I tweeted that Jordan Tyson was wide receiver 1, but somebody told me that Nick Harbor is on the way. So keep an eye out for him. Apparently that's going to happen.
Mm-hmm. He's not going to declare. I would have a hard time thinking that he's.
Do you think he should move to defensive end?
He doesn't want. So this is what I heard, is that he actively took teams off of his board who wanted him to play defense.
Mm.
He would only play wide receiver.
Makes sense. Makes sense.
Yeah.
He runs like, I don't even mean this as a backhanded compliment, but he runs the best clear outs that I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Like
he does.
He is really, I mean,
when
good
you're that big and you run a freaking 4.3 flat.
Yeah. And he hustles. He hustles yeah. on it. He loves the game. So I'll give him that.
Yeah. He just, for how big he is, he doesn't play through contact at all.
Yeah. And there's,
it's brutal.
I feel like there's more like wiggle than you might think, but I don't know. It's just, it's such a specialized role and he hasn't even reached that point yet. No. Where I think he could be like a high level deep threat in the NFL.
Right.
Much less a complete receiver.
All right. Let's talk about Arizona BYU, because we have an emerging player that needs to be brought up that we were texting a little bit about off air. So I'll let you take that one away.
Yeah. So Arizona safety Genesis Smith. I gave him an early third round grade. He is currently 46th on my board, 6'2", 204 pounds, true junior. He's got, I believe, 4 interceptions, 8 pass breakups over the last 2 seasons. Kind of plays a combination between slot and safety for them. I think he's a great athlete. I think he has the versatility, the production that the NFL is looking for when they're potentially going to draft a safety in the top 50. And even in a really strong class, I mean, this is, I think, a stacked year with Emmanuel McNeil Warren. Like, I can go on and on. Kamari Ramsey. I honestly feel like his tape stacks up with a lot of the top guys in this class. The difference is that he just doesn't have the sample size. And so, you know, obviously that's a big thing when it comes to the draft. But a young player, and whether it's in this class or a future one, I think he's somebody that's going to be on the NFL's radar.
Yeah. I had watched a little bit of him because, like, sometimes you go through these weeks and there's just so many games to watch that you find a way to filter. And obviously PFF grades aren't God or even credible, but like, I shouldn't say that. That's a little harsh, but like, sometimes it's an easy way to filter out like what games to prioritize or what players to prioritize. And he was one of those a few weeks ago that I did. And I liked him, but like, I knew he was underclassman. I was like, maybe this is a guy to come back to. Arizona State, Utah. Did you see that Sam Levitt is doubtful to play in this game?
Didn't see that.
Yeah. Which I'm not even considering Sam Levitt a 2026 kid, but like, yeah, that's brutal.
Tyson.
Yeah, that affects Jordan Tyson big time. Have you watched the, what the heck's the kid's name? He's got 2 first names for Utah, the edge rusher. John Daly something or other.
Oh, I just heard about him the other day. I need to. John Henry Daly.
John Henry Daly. Yeah. I haven't checked in on him. I've seen that he's been putting up some production, been putting up some numbers. He's going to go against the Arizona State right tackle, came in with some pretty high grades, but has disappointed this year that I'm not even going to try to pronounce his last name, Max I. So that's something to watch. The Utah tackles obviously need a bounce back game pretty badly, especially Lomu, more so than Fano, but they both need to play pretty well here to rebuild some confidence at least. And then Jordan Tyson, obviously. Anything else here?
Keith Abney.
Oh, good.
Still in my top 50.
Dude, I love Keith Abney. I think he's had a really good year, too.
Oh, he's
nobody's
talking
awesome
about
it.
This year. Yeah.
Nobody's talking about it. He's had a really strong year. Like,
I'm 10 points every week.
Why don't we like this guy in the first round?
Yeah. Yeah. I think I'm still in the Keith Abney fan club.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. All right. And that's at the 10:15 game on Saturday. So outside of that, we got San Diego State. We could talk about Chris Johnson a little bit, but then San Diego State, Nevada, and then Utah State, Hawaii. So I don't, and that Utah State, Hawaii game is a midnight kickoff Eastern time. So I will not be watching that game.
Yeah. Scrolling through to see if there are any games we didn't hit on.
I skipped over some of like the underwhelming ACC and Big 12. Like, I didn't hit on Stanford, SMU, or UCF, Cincinnati, things like that. But
Yeah, I guess the depth of this week is probably not that good because I'm thinking about Toledo Bowling Green for Emmanuel McNeil Warren.
Yeah,
in the 11 a.m. window. So, as always, we've got Jake Golday playing at 11.
That's true.
Jake Golday gonna rack up another six stops. I do get what you're saying, where it's like I think he's a better linear, way better linear athlete than lateral. Yeah, I mean, I get what you're saying, where it's like the Cincinnati linebackers, you know, where they just set the edge, you know?
Yeah. But very much like a Darian Beavers regen to me. And it's helmet scouting a little bit there, but like everybody fell in love with Darian Beavers, and I watched Darian Beavers. And Golday's not the same in this regard because Golday does play overhang like in the slot, and he will stack up a little bit more than Beavers did. But like people fell in love with Beavers just like being a battering ram from the A gap or just setting a strong edge as a Sam. And I'm like, but like this will get him on the field maybe 15 times a game at the NFL level. And then he didn't even make it the NFL level, but like,
yeah, they've got NFL players that can do that and are also elite pass rushers.
Yeah.
So they don't really need.
Right. So I get a little bit of those vibes, but again, he does do a little bit more in coverage, a little bit more like flexed out.
I'm way higher on Golday than Beavers, by the way, but
yeah.
I'm just saying like, there is a little bit of uncertainty there, and he's new to playing off ball linebacker. So it's kind of an adjustment, but I think to me, that's part of why I like him, is because he's so new to the position. And I feel like he already sees the game relatively quickly.
Yeah, I agree. I can get on board with that. All right, man. I think that's all I got.
That's all I got. I got it. What the one thing I do have, I have to check out this North Dakota State quarterback. I haven't watched him. He has a 17.1% big time throw rate. Like even just for fun, I have to watch this. But
I've seen a little bit about him on the timeline, but yeah. Is he out of eligibility?
I'm not sure. Cole Payton. Let's see. Yeah, it's this is his fifth year, but okay. This is his first year like playing at all.
Yeah.
96.5 PFF grade casual.
Casual. I mean, if Cam Miller got drafted,
yeah,
you might as well take a look at this guy. So interesting. I've seen people talking about him a little bit, but I mean, he's the most he's thrown the ball in a game is 23 times. He hasn't broken 20 out of five of the six games this year. That's pretty funny.
And I just want to see what this tape looks like, honestly,
yeah.
Because I don't know what a 17.6% big time throw rate looks like on 88 attempts on the year.
6'3", 233. That's a big boy too. That's a big boy. Yeah. We'll have to,
I'll have thoughts on him next episode.
Yeah, that's fair. We should come back with Cole Payton thoughts.
Yeah.
I love that. Okay. Awesome, man. Well, everybody, enjoy your weekend of good quality football. Enjoy Mendoza versus Moore. And until next week, this has been another episode of the Daft on Draft podcast.